Log Talk Radio.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is going to get their ass whooped over this thing.
You can say that again. Well, I decided to tune in at the last minute, and it was just as much for myself as for anyone else that decided to check it out or listen later. With everything that's going on with the last week, so I think I kind of laid out last week personally the crazy situation that I'm going through for the third time. Basically, it just took such a toll, it's wiping me out, and all I can really do is, you know, pace, exercise a little bit, and then when I get exhausted enough, sort of passed out, and then jump through a million hoops that they require for you to do, all stemming from a semi-serious, well, I don't want to say that, it was serious, but put into a proper context, a situation where if it had been another state or even just maybe 10 years ago or even 10 minutes earlier than what had happened, police had not had to get involved. But extrapolating from what happened, I'll recap it real fast. Basically, what happened was that my son ran out and decided he wanted to go to play with some of his friends at the pool. And he was not allowed to. And by the time I caught up to him there, someone had called a police officer that was already in the neighborhood. It's a big neighborhood. They hang out in here when they're bored. I guess it's a low crime area, or they're maybe overstaffed. So, you know, maybe they eat their lunch in here. Maybe the guy's just stationed in here. And someone must have said, hey, come get a load of this and check this out. Why is this kid here? He doesn't seem to be with his mom or dad. He's playing with the other kids. And then we kind of went into the philosophy of how this all works last week. I didn't want to get into the mechanics of how it all worked last week because I didn't want to get into the actual steps that they take legally. I wanted to just discuss basically the philosophy of where these ideas of consent and, you know, the law and where all these things meet, whether it's natural law, contract law, law of merchant, which is, you know, lex mercatoria, and how they're all this cacophony that makes up the American common law, and how it's all a limited liability thing where everybody's doing this thing that my dad used to talk about in medicine called CYA, which it's proactive in the sense that you're trying to cover your ass for your liability. So one person is passing that like a hot potato. They're passing this to the next person so that nobody gets stung. So what happens is that an incident gets reported, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whatever. And then they move it on to the next person and they say, well, hey, that's not my department. It's compartmentalized just enough to where it's a nuisance for everyone. I don't want to say that I was targeted, but the name on the form, when you sign the paperwork, says target. So basically what they try to do at that point is target you and corroborate an allegation. They look for things to corroborate it, even though the person, this is where the compartmentalization comes in, that is sent may or may not be trying to do that personally. It's almost like state trooper, where they're not really looking to arrest you, maybe they're just looking to meet a quota of, you know, certain number of speeders, and when they pull you over, they know they're going to give you a ticket. You know, the second they hit their lights, you're not going to talk your way out of it. They're going to give you the ticket. It's just a matter of whether or not it escalates, or they give you a how big of a ticket, or extra infractions, or that sort of thing. So in other words, once they target you in that, you know, they already know the outcome. It's all about limiting, you know, how far it's going to go. As opposed to, you know, maybe if you just got pulled over by a local police officer, and they just noticed something that they thought was suspicious and they wanted to check it out, and you can maybe talk your way out of that and say, hey, just for your clarification, so that, you know everything is on the up and up here. I was just on my way home. I didn't know my headlights were off, whatever it is. That's a different situation. But in these situations where you make it impossible, you're almost your own worst enemy, because you kind of make it impossible for them not to do something. It's like I had this conversation with my dad also about psychiatrists, where if you go into a psychiatrist's office and you've been depressed, you're going to walk out with some kind of a medication and a diagnosis, because if they turned you right around and said, no, you're fine, even if you were, there'd be some sort of a liability if you went out after that and something happened to you, because they'd say, well, hey, he went in and the guy gave him a clean bill of health. It's almost like there's this... there's this burden on them to do something, to say that some proper course of action was taken to remedy the situation. So while being under the specter of this and having these people come and show up at different times, which is their whole game, to just sort of, they do have a procedure, but they like to keep you on your toes. And how can you really get anything extra done on top of all the exigencies of life and things that are already going on? You know, I really, in good conscience, couldn't take any time in between to study anything that maybe you'd find interesting in the interim, between last week and this week, because all I was thinking about was all the things I had to do, you know, to keep this ship going, you know, for work and, you know, to keep my life going the way it was. I had enough things on my plate. I definitely don't think anybody needed anything like this. And so I felt like, but I still felt like I had to, you know, come on and talk a little bit. I did not get a chance to say hello to Bill. I don't even think I told Bill this story. And it was funny because last week, I think it was, he was talking about how, you know, a certain string of events that happened in his life that he felt like it was almost like a hex. And it was so funny, I didn't even want to say that, but I was thinking the same thing. Sometimes, you know, a few things can happen all at the same time to where you feel like somebody, well, hey, I signed a piece of paper that called me a target. So, in a way, it kind of was like that. So, what could I talk about on this show for a few minutes that might be interesting instead of this soap opera type of stuff? Because that might be good for me to be able to explore. I think I tagged this Hollywood politics metaphor. I usually use the same four tags. Well, with politics, I thought I saw something about Trump being impeached. And I think what that's all about is that after that whole FBI investigation, you know, they had a deal that they had made with their constituents, the Democrat Party did. And, you know, they're just not going to let up with that. And, you know, I'm not a supporter of either one. It's a big joke, the whole system. It's all about just keeping this thing afloat. It's a for-profit, revenue-generating. They all are. Some are just run, you know, more piss-poor than others, the states and, you know, cities and municipalities and all that stuff. But, you know, they have squabbles with each other. And they're all degenerates. And you can meet them. You know, you can meet these politicians. And you can lobby them. The thing that's, I don't want to make this blanket statement that you don't have any power, because there are rules in place to where if you call, let's say, your congressperson, they have to give you a certain response within a certain amount of time, and it is basically recorded to hold them accountable in a sense. So while you might not think it's worth it to stand in line to vote, and it might not be, there are ways to get involved to at least keep them accountable. And, you know, so I don't ever want to say that it's completely, you know, useless. And right now they're ramming through a bill, I believe. See, I've not been up to date with this stuff. I think it's called SB 6-7 something. It's about a vaccination. It's something about vaccines in California. And basically, the upshot to it is the reason they're ramming it through is because there's been a mass awakening of people. And once the people have woken up to a certain issue, it's like a snowball effect, you know, and it just builds and builds and builds. And even if it takes a long time, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, you can't shut that off. It's just going to keep building. So it's basically a race against time. And the way that it all works with that whole industry is, in the old days, it goes back to the generation thing that I've done a few times with the boomers one, boomers two, and all that. Well, basically, since the inception of vaccines, there was an anti-vaccine movement. It's not a new thing. So this idiot that said it was a Russian propaganda thing, I'm not going to say his name because I used to be friends with him, and I probably still would be friends with him, but I disagree with him on this, that he said was about the measles strain. That strain and that measles, when that breakout happened, that was from a genotype that was in the from the shot. So you can't use that as the excuse. And this guy went into the whole I don't want to say it because then it'll lead to it'll be for another show. The point is that there's a big movement with that, and the reason why they're slamming through this legislation is because of the fact that so many people, so many mothers, just people that are just allergic to vaccinations. And since these things are basically cultured inside of a individual, each individual one is different, each individual shot, each one is different. You know, they're relatively the same, but basically they're all different, and people have different responses to them. My mind's really scatterbrained tonight, so if you can bear with me, I'm just going off the top of my head. Some people just can't, you know, everything's a risk to reward benefit, and I'll say something good about the whole. Okay, when it comes to pharmaceuticals, let's say, or Western medicine, the gold standard is whether you started with Plato and Socrates and Aristotle and all that Western civilization, the pinnacle of the whole thing, the gold standard of all of that, the scientific method and the double-blind trials are the best way to know if something does actually work. So then you take that, extrapolate from that, and then you use a risk-to-reward ratio to say, okay, here's the benefits, here's the drawbacks. And that's really the safest, most empiricist way to view this stuff. And if I got some form of cancer or something, and I had to weigh out the risks to rewards of doing a, you know, a chemotherapy, which I actually did have to do, and people told me at the time, they were like, look, this medicine will probably make you sicker, and you should wait until another kind of medicine comes out, because younger people don't respond well, and for some reason, whatever the reason is, and they were right. And then years later, a better medicine came out, and I got better. But at the time, I didn't make the best decision using that formulae. So it's kind of like that with the vaccinations, is that some of the things that are on the schedule, like I was saying about the generations, the first generation, and I don't think this was mandated, was smallpox and polio. And then after that, there was a ramp up, and then you had the seven, but they were in like 17 doses. So seven different shots, but well, seven different vaccines that were, and they're not all vaccines, they're immunizations. The very first one was the very first vaccine was the smallpox. That's the only one that's an actual vaccine, because that's the name of the smallpox. The vaccina, I think it's called, without it in front of me. So anyway, the first generation, this is how young of a science it is too. This first generation of boomers got those two. They probably weren't even mandated. In fact, they probably didn't even ask the parents' permission. They just went to the schools. And, you know, you got that. You'll see that chunk in people's shoulders. If they're old enough, they got that gun. And they went, bang, and got it right in their shoulder. You'll see that scar a lot of people have. Even actors you'll see in the movies with that. Then they did the ramp up. And then you had the hepatitis B on the first day, which is insane. That's a sexually transmitted disease. And you had, they do vitamin K on the day you're born, all these things the day you're born. And the ultrasound, all the stuff is very traumatic. That's why people are bringing their children home and they're having babies at home and they're homeschooling. And, you know, they're going back. The generation before that was kind of like, you know, they were casting off tradition and all the prosperity that had built up to that time. They were kind of like doing their own thing. And now, a few generations later, people are sort of saying, hey, you know, some of these things that were in place were beneficial, and they're becoming more traditional. They're going back to the more traditional I didn't want to say gender. That's the traditional gender roles and things. You know, there's, you can see this with these different movements of people, whether it's homeschooling or homesteading or, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I'm getting at. And but what you're seeing from the ramp of that generation, which would be the, I guess, Generation X, is that these kids would be unvaccinated, their kids of the Generation X, and they are still coming in with issues because they had gotten their full schedule of the 7. And I think, yeah, 17 doses. So then this new generation, what they want to do is have a healthy adult 2020, and they have something like 260 plus new vaccinations coming down the pipe. And it's a mandated something like 70 doses. And I should have it in front of me, but it's a lot and it's a crazy amount. And this is the first generation that's gonna, if you got the you took the child in from day one, would be receiving so many. And in the healthiest country for when it comes to the first day infant mortality rates, I think it's Japan, their schedule is not anything near ours. You know, they either space them out, which is sensible if you're, see, I don't want to give out the advice, but what I've noticed anecdotally and from what, because I have doctors in the family and in the industry, and, you know, they'll sort of mix it up. So some people, you know, like they're, I don't know why people are afraid of chicken pox. Everyone I know had that. And now there's a big thing to move to push to get to try to get rid of that. But the reason why that's an illness, that's a rite of passage illness, just like the measles is. And the reason why you're supposed to kind of get that when you're young is because then the older people who got that, when they get around to a young person that has it, their system will then remember and ramp up. But if they get this strain that's coming through a needle, then the older people, their immune, their earned, because it's a lifetime immunity if you get a wild strain, which is, you know, just getting it from going to school, then it doesn't do that. So then they say, well, look, this shingles and these adults, they're getting all this stuff. So that's, you're seeing this happening. And it's all based on this idea of this herd immunity. And, you know, just like everything else, there's some of it, it sounds really good. That whole idea of, you know, if you Wikipedia smallpox, they'll say, oh yeah, for hundreds of years in China, they had this idea of, you know, lancing a boil and taking some of the pus and, you know, inhaling the scabs or whatever, a small amount, introducing it into your system, and then, you know, get, and it sounds really good. And it sounds like, yeah, that makes sense. If you introduce just a small amount into your body, then the antibodies will be created and you'll be, you know, you'll be protected. But it doesn't, it's not what the data is showing. And you can see that by the comparisons from, you know, the other countries. Then the other thing that factually with this, and I'll end on this one, is how they have admitted that they don't do the double blind tests or the trials with this like they do everything else. And when they do a trial with vaccines or immunizations, they'll use an adjuvant. They'll use an aluminum shot. So when they did that real bad one, the one the girls were getting, then they expanded it to the boys, the HPV. I was talking to a guy from the CDC that I worked with, and he said, before this was even mandated for boys. He goes, I'm giving this to my son. My son's getting this when he turns 8 or 9, a really young age. He goes, whether he likes it or not. And, you know, that's how indoctrinated he was. And this guy was, you know, a decent guy. And he was, you know, pretty smart. And, you know, but he before this was even an issue for boys, or this was even mandated or proposed to give to boys, this was, well, I know for a fact it hadn't been at the time, because when I heard him say that, I was like, what? And then I tried to talk to him about it after he was given a lecture. So that was a guy from the CDC that was doing trials at a treatment center. And this is another thing that they do. They, before they passed universal health care, they needed people who had insurances to do, well, they didn't need people that had insurance, but if you wanted to get a medicine that you needed and you didn't have insurance, you could get into a trial that for a medicine that they were doing. So you'd go down to, let's say, University of Miami, if you lived in Florida, and you'd have to go down like 3 times a week, and you'd basically have to live there, depending on which medicine it was and what you're trying to get. And their trade-off was that, you know, you might get the medication. It depends what kind of trial they're doing. And that's what you would do. And you could get these medications early, but you'd be a guinea pig, basically. You know, and you would debate, like I said earlier, the risk to reward and how bad whatever it was that you had, you wanted to try to, you know, cure or, you know, get rid of, treat. So there's a lot of gray areas with this. You just have to be smart and you have to be informed. And since we live in the information age, there's really no excuse. But the problem of it is you need discernment. There's so much information. And these companies pay to create these little sites that look like they are created by mothers or by individuals. And they're not. They're corporate sites that are masquerading as that. So you just have to be careful where you get your information, and you have to use discernment. So we're flooded and inundated with all this information. So that's my little thing on, I want to do more. If you want to hear a good thing about where corporate interests and you know, the Surgeon General and how the military industrial complex is connected to the pharmaceutical industrial complex, how it's all part and parcel, you can listen to Bobby Kennedy Jr. speaking in front of, I think he was in Albany, New York, and I think it was about this bill that I know it was SB something, and he gave a really good, he was just, you know, he just nailed every point about how, you know, I think it was a the 90-second marker came on. I'll try to finish it up a little bit. I'll maybe do one or two more topics, and then I'll close it up. But check that out, and definitely listen to that, no matter what side of the issue you're on. He really explained how these companies are, you know, they're all tied in. That's very distracting when that pops up. So if it cuts me off, that's a good place to end. But if not, I'll try to segue into this other thing. The next topic, I guess, is that was politics. So which one should we do? Hollywood? Did anything happen in Hollywood? I know that they're politicizing a lot of the new movies that are coming. I haven't even come out yet. That Joker movie, every week I keep seeing. But I think this is just to keep the name in the news. That's very distracting. because there's no such thing as bad press. So maybe that's why they keep talking about how, you know, it's super violent. And what else did I keep seeing? You know, I apologize. When I'm not under allegation in the future, you know, I always have an excuse of, you know, how the show could be, how the show is going to be better. But honest to God, if I didn't know better, you know, I would think that someone was trying to sabotage it. And I mean, like, you know, some outside force, you know, that the, but, you know, this was my own fault. What happened? It really was my own fault, and I feel bad about that. And, you know, I try to prepare as much as I can, but I mean, like, I you know, we all have lives that we have to do each time, and I try to put a little bit aside every night, a little, you know, write a little bit, and if I see something that's interesting, take some notes on it, and then take my experiences. And the reason why I feel like it's worth sharing, if this isn't cut me off, is because I was thinking about this, and I don't know if I should bring it up now that the thing is probably over, but that if you guys understood where I live and who I ran into and the stuff they said, and I don't mean this like, oh, I'm going to betray people's trust and tell what they said. I just mean through everyday life in this crazy town, in this crazy area where all these things sort of happened at the same time, and I was growing up, I kind of Forrest Gumped my way through it and ran into some interesting people that, I mean, the election, this county right now, there's three things that I can say that happened here. There was the election with Bush and Gore. Came down to the votes in this county to decide the thing, supposedly. At least this is where the controversy was. Epstein, that whole thing, which spans now, you're seeing all that it goes into. Transhumanism, it goes into genetics, it goes into some of their favorite atheist scientists and guys at MIT. And I mean, this guy was all over the place. He wasn't just a compromat. He was a mover and a shaker in places where, I mean, from politics to Hollywood to, you know, the tags on the show, it was everywhere. And he, I mean, I think the smallest thing he was involved in was the compromising of people. And that was no small thing on top of, you know, whatever shady business dealings he had. And, you know, the guy, I don't even want to give this guy, well, the guy who did the first show on him, I was working with at the time. And that's what led to our falling out, was because I didn't take the show serious enough. But that's just because, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know the guy had a financial relationship or a vested interest with a client at the time who was going up against these people. You know, he could have hinted it or alluded to that, and I would have said, oh, sorry. So whenever you have things like that and this stuff's going on and you have a ability to clarify, I think you kind of owe it to everybody to do that. I had seen this guy, he did a video once. I met him on YouTube, and somebody made a video response to the video he did, and they said, you don't understand, you are a Bill Cooper fan, and Bill Cooper was a patriotic American, but he was wrong about who was really behind everything, because David Duke opened my eyes. This is the guy making the response, and he said, David Duke was right, it was the Zionist Jews running everything, and Bill Cooper said it was the Illuminists, and you need to read David Duke to really understand just what was going on. And I remember seeing that video and thinking to myself, you know, if this guy lived where I lived and he saw the movers and the shakers behind the scenes that I've seen, you know, he probably got his information. Well, he said he got his information from David Duke. I was like saying, you know, it's such a shame that I don't have a platform to really go in on this topic, because I can see some points that he makes that are, you know, they're not wrong, but I can also see some areas where he's being led astray. So I felt like since I had some of these unique experiences that I don't know how deep to get into tonight, that I should talk about them. I mean, just the other day, I'm looking at this right now, that idiot Rogan was interviewing Rob Zombie, and the first thing out of his mouth is that he grew up in the town that my whole family was from. And if you guys knew the town is so small that they would always say they grew up in a town next to it that's way bigger, because, you know, it's well, I don't want to get too specific, but these kinds of things happen all the time. And another thing, okay, I will get into a little bit. The Rambo movie that just came out, another controversial movie. Okay, the guy that the script, the issue with the script, let's just say, I have an intimate involvement with, where let's go back to that one on a different episode. We'll revisit that one, because I want to see how this all plays out, this movie, and I want to actually see the movie before I comment on it, because I haven't, and I don't know what all of the, you know, what all of the issue is with it. I haven't been to a movie in years, because I just can't get out to go. If I had a babysitter or something, maybe we'd be able to do that. But, you know, those kinds of weird little things. I just scrolled down here on this first page, and I see this kid from Lord of the Rings that I used to talk to all the time. I mean, there was no magic to all of this. I just either called them up or I bumped into them randomly. It's a small world. It's a smaller world than you think. And if you just, you know, talk to people and mention certain things, you know, that pique their interest, they'll talk back to you. And all of a sudden the kids send me stuff about Freemasonry. And this is back when I didn't even know that much about it. I thought it was a political thing he was sending me. And then it's funny, you know, all these years later, you put the stuff together and you're like, holy crap, he was trying to see if I was on the level. And he was a cool guy. He was a surfer. He wanted to come to Florida and hang and surf. That was what I was talking about. Vanilla Ice, another one, real cool dude. He doesn't talk that way that he talks in on those shows, those so-called reality shows. That's like a voice he puts on. Another really cool guy who was like, yeah, come down to the track and you know, hang out and all this sort of stuff. So I met politicians at bookstores and at people's houses, and I went into some crazy people's houses when I was doing general contracting and plumbing and, you know, installed everything from carpet, just, you know, all kinds of stuff, and got to talking, struck up conversation with them, and, you know, they have these exotic pets I think were illegal, and I saw crazy stuff. People had three-tiered fountains inside their house. I'm seeing this picture of Scarface, and I'm like, it looked like that. It kind of looked like that. Big landing things in the backyard where they land helicopters. I mean, it doesn't make them bad, but I mean, what do you think those people get up to? And, you know, who has giant pythons in their house? And where do you get giant pythons and enclosures to keep them? And these things were like 20-foot pythons in their wall. So I remember at the time, and I'm looking at this house, and when we were pulling up, I had been in all these giant neighborhoods because all of the clientele in there, you know, that's the area they called around. And a cousin of mine had done the landscaping for the outer part of the neighborhood. So I was familiar with it, and some of the kids I had gone to school with it at one time had lived in there. So I'm coming back in as the plumber, and I like my job. I love my job. And I see this house and I'm like, wow, that's a big house. And it was the guest house garage. It wasn't even the guest house. It was the garage for the guest house. Just opulent, opulent wealth. And you know what? A lot of the people were very down to earth and, you know, just seemed very normal. I'm scrolling. I'm trying to find something that I can kind of close on that will be good. Wow, I seem to have missed a lot this week. When all this is said and done, and hopefully it's resolved properly, and you know that these people get off our back. In fact, coming on and talking about it is kind of a smart thing to do, because if I do that and they do anything improperly, then I have an audience to say this is documented. So it's kind of a good thing. I think I mentioned that last week, but I almost can't think of anything else. That's how stressful it is. And I'm sure anyone could imagine that's probably had to go through it, because it's common now. Like I said, they have this system in place where this is what they have to do. You see somebody and, you know, they're, spanking their kid or yelling at them in public, and everybody's got a phone and they call, and then all of a sudden, boom, people are going to show up at your house and start taking pictures and getting up in your business. Very, very, unfortunately, very common. And I don't know how much good they're really doing. I don't know. I don't want to go into it. I know I don't want to, you know, castigate anybody. As a matter of fact, I made that very clear. I said to the person, I said, you're probably very sincere and mean well, but that doesn't mean that the people that you work for do. And, you know, I'm not casting any aspersions on you as an individual, but, you know, I have to be cautious and I have to assert my rights, my parental rights. And that's reasonable. And that's that's the approach I take. I'm not advocating it. I'm not saying that that's what anybody else should do. But common sense, you know, I think is just wins the day. Well, I don't see anything else interesting because I'm not logged in. So all that's on here, man, is just movies, fishing, and cat videos. So unless you want to know what George Lucas thinks about the new, you know what? Let's do that. Dr. Brown is done responding to the critics. And I'll get into him next week. Okay, so Lucas hates Disney Star Wars. I think everyone does. I guess supposedly when he sold the company for $4 billion, they had a tentative agreement that he could keep some, not keep some creative control, but he could give notes and that they could or could not follow them, and where he, obviously there was some bone of contention. I don't know why they wanted to go off script and play, do market research and make the movie, just remake the old movies, where he wanted to innovate every new film. And even though tonally it was weird and, you know, the older movies looked more futuristic than the newer movies, they, you know, the it kind of threw it off a little bit. What he was trying to do was innovate with each one. And I can respect that, and then tell a cohesive story that connected all of them together. And if he had had the ability to tell the last three, because they made three more movies, he would have tied the whole thing into a bow, and it would have all been one final story, and it would have made sense the way he had outlined it, supposedly, a long time ago. And I think, if you really want to know how it was supposed to, if this is still even recording, if you want to know how it was all supposed to end, was that he shrunk everything down, and it was going to play out on like a in a microverse, like the Force was run by these little tiny creatures called the Wills, and they're the ones telling the story on the scroll. It, you know, the famous letter scroll that comes up. So that was what he wanted to do, and I think that he sold the company because, I don't know if he had any of his own kids, I think he adopted them, and they said to him, listen, you got diabetes or whatever, you're not going to live forever, and you don't, this is your legacy, and if you died today, there'd be nobody that's running the company, like none of his adopted kids run the, at least to my knowledge and from what I've read, actively run the company. And he was friends with Steve Jobs, who, before he died, very suspiciously, sold Pixar to Disney to Bob Iger. What happened was that he liked the way that was all done, because I think he was friends with Jobs. So he figured they'll take my notes, and then they'll finish the work, and all the people that are employed at, I think, Lucasfilm, will be able to keep their jobs if something happens to me. And that was the idea. So he was, if you give him the benefit of the doubt, trying to do a good thing with that. And this is all very superficial, I know. I'm not going into the symbolism or any of that sort of stuff. I'm just trying to end it on this. This is the level where I'm at. I can't go that deep tonight. But so that was the idea, and then what happened was they said, thanks, but no thanks, and they cast the notes aside, and they made this SJW garbage that they made that was not even, the two movies didn't even connect to each other. I don't even think they even connected to the last movies. You had a New Order instead of an Empire, and now they're going back to him, and they're actually resurrecting the old characters, because they just messed the whole thing up. So, their failure is now complete. And that is going to be the story with Star Wars. But I don't think anybody cares anymore at this point, because they ruined the whole thing. And what's funny about it is, what the lesson about it is, if there's any truth to archetypes and the monomyth and the idea that these symbolic stories have, see, I am going a little bit deep. These symbolic characters that stand for archetypal heroes and things, they kind of have a life of their own. So when you don't tell the story correctly, even the most casual fan or observer will not, they're not going to like it, even if the aesthetic is the same. even if you say, look, there's another, there's the Millennium Falcon, there's all the fan service stuff. We'll just do the obligatory fan service stuff, and we'll just do our push an agenda, a cultural agenda for the whole rest of it. We'll make a girl, we'll say the Force is female and all this bull crap. And, but we'll have, you know, the same, you know, we'll put all the perfunctory stuff in there. You can't do that with an archetypal story because it hits you on a different level. It resonates on a different level. And that whole story is about sex and growing up and stuff. The whole thing with Luke Skywalker, his original name, they call him Wormy in the deleted scenes. So really, he's kind of like goes from this flaccid, wimpy, bullied little dorky kid to where it's about him maturing and growing up in this big egg-shaped ship of state, which is the socialist ship of state, which is always female, which is why they want to reverse all that. And then you have the X and Y wing fighters that fly into it, and he's got to shoot into the hole. I mean, it's this what it is that it's about. And that's why they always make a joke and say, well, why would they put that there? Why would it be so easy to blow up? Why would they make a port that says, shoot here? And he's got to go through the trench in his X and Y wings and basically hit the whole thing. And then also, the reason why they had to change that basic story is because it's a story about basically fighting the power, fighting the established order, the established system. And they were rebels. So they completely subverted that. And then they tried to pass it off as, you know, with the nostalgia, they tried to fool people. But my God, man, imagine if you did that with Star Trek. Have you ever seen a Star Trek convention? There's a documentary that about one of the actresses that left, and she thought it was a career, you know, step up to leave the show. And then she realized how much of a, cult following it had by going to these conventions that she didn't realize while she was on it. And then she was like, holy crap, what did I do? That's what it would be like with Star Wars, to destroy that show, to say, oh yeah, we're just gonna we're gonna fool them, you know, by subverting it all and changing the characters and just, you know, doing, you know, pushing this agenda. And they won't notice. They won't notice. I mean, if that's one of the most scrutinized, you know, film series. It was the biggest, and I'm surprised that he did sell it before. I'm surprised before he did complete. He should have, if he was smart, he would have started to make that last movie. And then Disney would have had to make the last two based on that first one. So at least he could have started the ending. But I guess they must have told him, yeah, we're going to take your notes and follow what you had. Otherwise, he wouldn't have submitted them. So who knows? I think people don't care at this point, and it's a shame because, you know, even my son likes that, and he's never even seen the movies. He's just seen the games, and he gets it, and he gets all the characters. He knows all the characters and stuff. So something about that, whoever really wrote it, and whoever, you know, I know Ralph McQuarrie designed this stuff, whoever designed it, they did a really good job with the architecture, with the characters. They did the whole samurai, Masonic stuff with the Nazi stuff and the colors, the red, the white, and the black for the Empire. I mean, all the stuff is very high concept. And to think that you could just, you know, fool the people and use research and just do test screenings. It's what they call the new one is copy and paste. They call the guy copy and paste Abrams, and that's what he does. He's just going to keep testing different storylines and endings, and whichever one the test audiences go for, he'll copy and paste into some sort of a final cut. So it'll be disastrous. And, you know, they already had a ride at one of the parks, because I remember going to it, and they did a pretty good job with it. So I don't understand how do you screw up Star Wars? I don't get it. So we'll see who has the last laugh. And And on that note, I wish I had some outro music because I would cue it. So we'll stick a fork in this one because I want to watch the arm wrestling, WAL, and I'm going to peace out, guys. So good night, good luck, and I'll see you next week.